We're ready. Let's start. Good morning to all of you. It's great to see you here today. Here we are on our last session, and what we're going to be talking about is the churches and my response. So we got a really fun time this morning that we're going to do these following things here. First, we're going to look at exploring some current research on attitudes on immigration and receive some tips about how to talk about it, because you know this is a tough topic for all of us to talk about with our friends sometimes and with other people in our congregations. And so there's a new body of research on attitudes on immigration, and there are some new ways of talking about it now. One of the things that we had, second thing we're going to do is learn about the church's response, ecumenical accompaniment internationally and locally. And the third thing is plan your next steps personally and perhaps congregationally to accompany migrants with protection, advocacy, representation, and opportunity. So that's what we're going to get in. So this time we're going to be going until 12 o'clock. And I'm really happy that we have that amount of time, because this is a big area to cover in that time. So just kind of a recap a little bit here. When we talk about Amparo, the ELCA strategy, the PARO is really important because it has to do with the activities of protection, advocacy, representation, and opportunities. And so here you're seeing some of the ways that ELCA members and congregations and others have been engaged in advocacy around these all-important activities. So I'm going to be going through most of these during the time that we're together this morning. This is just kind of a summary of some of the things that we're going to be talking about today. All right, so here we go on something really kind of new. One of the gifts of being an immigration lawyer has been for me to connect with the American Immigration Council. And you don't have to be a lawyer to do that, but that's kind of how I discovered them. And they've had, and maybe they didn't really have the kind of prominence that they might have had in past times, but they certainly have had more prominence these days in terms of what's happening. And the American Immigration Council has a project called the Center for Inclusion and Belonging. And those are some of the things that did not happen so strongly in our previous years. And so they actually have a woman by the name of Wendy Belis, who is the head of that project. And when you go to the American Immigration Council's website, you're going to see some beautiful videos that are like 2 minutes long about belonging and what belonging looks like. And so you might, I'm just kind of letting you know that this could be a possible resource for people, because it just brings, they have all kinds of inventive ways of showing belonging for all of us. So a study, they commissioned a study that was called What Immigration Issues Do Americans Hold Sacred? A Psychological Journey into American Attitudes Toward Immigrants. So, and they looked at 14 issues, and I don't think we're going to be able to get to all 14 of them. But that we're going to do a couple of them today. So it's going to be back on our feet and jumping up to the front of the room a little bit, to do that. But before we do that, I just want to sort of set the stage a little bit more about it. When we think about sacred values, we're kind of wondering what does that really mean? And what does that really look like when they were doing this study? I had the privilege of listening to them describe it. And it's like this. Here's a really good example. If somebody came up to you and said, "I love your child," how much will you sell them for? Yes, that exact reaction. She just went, "Oh!" That's what she said. It's like there is no price for your child. There is no price on the head of your child. It's that sacred, it's that close to you, that even if you were starving, there is no price on your child. Yeah. You know, and this is, it's interesting, Stacy and I were just talking about Bishop Bernardo Gomez, and one time, one of the things he said at a Synod Assembly in Milwaukee was, this was in the times, the previous times when we were building walls at our border. He said, if my child is hungry, there is not a wall that is too tall for me to attempt to go over, you know, if it's necessary for my child. You know, and that was something, the whole Synod Assembly went, oh, I never thought about it like that, you know. But now, of course, this group has been here all week, and here's Mitch, you know, here's our Central American dad, and we've seen that, happen. So that's, I think that's a kind of a way of looking at it. So when we think about sacred values, that's what we're talking about here. It's and what has happened in the whole immigration context with what they're describing is that people are looking at these as sacred now. We've immigration isn't just a head thing anymore. It's gone into the heart. And I'm kind of giving you here's a little bit of a preview. I should probably save this till the end. But everybody likes to know sometimes the end of the story. And this end of the story in this big study that they did, which you can get online and you'll be able to, you know, come up here and take a look at that, is that about 25% of the population in the United States has an open stance toward immigration and for them that those are sacred values. About 25-27% of the population has a closed stance. And for them, these are sacred values. So, and then we have this big mass of people that are in between. And they've even actually got to the point where they can describe the characters there. So, I think that if there was a person, anyone who wanted to go deeper, you know, contact the Center for Inclusion and Belonging, and Wendy Felice will do something for your congregation or your synod to talk about these values, and it's really fascinating to describe the different characters and what they believe. So now it's our turn, okay? We're gonna replicate this a little bit here, and our percentages might not be the same as other people's percentages. But the beautiful thing when they set this up is they looked at whether people identified as Democrats or Republicans when they did it as well. And so they were able to see, you know, where do we have more ground together? And they did find ground together, you know, so, and we'll definitely do that piece of it. So now everybody who wants to participate in this is up on your feet, okay? And the way we're going to set this up is that, I'm going to be facing this way. Since the door is over there, the open door is over there, the open stance is over there, you know, and the door is closed over here, window's almost closed too. So on this side, we have the closed stance. So I'm going to read the name of a value, and I'm going to read what the statement is that belongs with the open stance, what belongs with the closed stance, and then there's all this territory in the middle. You know, I probably should turn off the screen. If it starts bothering people, I will, but, you know, you may not be standing there very long anyway. And we'll just see where we are, okay? And don't be afraid if you have a different stance. If nobody's around you, we promise we're not going to call on you and make you say and ask you to say anything, okay? And we need to all respect each other on that. Even if you see that person or those people later on, you know, it's don't, okay? But if we have big groups on each end, maybe we'll have a little conversation about that, okay? So here's one, family separation. Continue the practice of separating families, known as family separation, by jailing individuals who cross the border and holding their children in custody. Stop the practice of separating families, known as family separation, by jailing individuals who cross the border and holding their children in custody. Or in the middle. Where are you going? Make your movements. Okay, you can't be back that far. You gotta tighten up over here. Okay, that is no super surprise, because that is the one value that Democrats and Republicans in larger percentages agree with. So, okay, as a sacred value, those with more open stance that say stop it, actually we're only 46.7% instead of 100%. So what does that say about all of you? And then those who have a very restrictive view about family separation actually will say, the total for both together is only 57%. That is the one value that we can actually talk about together as Democrats and Republicans, where we have a higher percentage of people that would be in agreement. Okay? So, and that's been really important. I will sort of preview by saying that when you think about sanctuary is the church's response to family separation. And because every single person who's been in that kind of, has bought into sanctuary did it because they didn't want to be separated from their family. All right, so let's take another one. Okay. Now here we're going to do the wall. Okay. Over here, we should not build the wall. There are better ways to limit illegal immigration into the United States. That's her words, not mine. Okay. On this side, we should build the wall to protect America's southern border from illegal immigrants. Make your motion. Make your moves. You can spread. Are you going to get up?
Oh, sure. I had to go back to San Salvador for
a
while.
Nice. Me a coffee, I may be here a while.
Maybe we should swap ends of the room so people can.
What is this? What is this one?
I agree. This is the one that says we should not build a wall. There are better ways to limit illegal immigration into the United States. All right. Okay. All right.
I was just demonstrating my position. Was
All right. Okay. So here's here's the deportation question. Okay. On this side, the U.S. should implement a mass deportation of all undocumented or illegal immigrants. Now, I think some people might want to move on this one. The U.S. should deport undocumented or illegal immigrants only if they pose a threat to public safety. Is there any movement? Is it this way? Any movement?
Yes.
Only if they.
Okay. Can I come to the middle?
Yes, you can. You're invited to the middle. You're invited to the middle. And even if you move into where you're out of the screen.
I'm not sure even what you. So mass deportation.
Mass deportation of all. Yeah. Or if you're not sure, come on to the middle. You know. Okay. All right. Does anyone want to have any dialogue about that?
Sure.
I mean, is anyone comfortable? Those of you in the middle, is anyone comfortable saying why you're in the middle, or if you don't feel like you have to?
What is a criminal? A mother who steals bread for her children?
Well, it says all.
But it says.
Can you read it again?
All right.
Doesn't it say threat to public safety?
Well, she's close to this side here.
Yeah.
So she's she didn't move very far.
Well,
so go ahead.
Can we pull it?
Let me pull it off. I can pull it off. We don't need it right this minute. It's easy to do.
The light of your eyes is to help you
immediately.
Oh man.
We have base of making.
We have base.
These were two radically different sides. Yeah.
So I have a question, maybe to put on
side.
Here, listen, she's got a question for you all over here.
A criminal, you know, criminal behavior in their own country. And, you know, they're crossing over to our country or here.
No, these are undocumented, being deported from the United States.
Okay, so that's so they're doing criminal acts here.
Right. They could have.
That should be deported.
Can you read it again? I think there's a
The U.S. should on this side. The U.S. should implement a mass deportation. The U.S. should deport undocumented or illegal immigrants only if they pose a threat to public safety.
Right, that's the middle.
The U.S. should immigrants. Implement a mass deportation of all undocumented or illegal.
I thought it was all or nothing.
Yeah,
that's what we threw in the middle that we made exceptions for because they're.
No, they said that only if they pose a threat to public safety. Okay.
I just wanted to get extra steps in.
Right. He's good at that.
But isn't it typical that we don't always hear the other person's perspective?
Yes. Yes, it is important. Yes, go ahead.
I worked for San Diego County Probation during the 90s, and we deported violent batterers who had beaten. Mm-hmm. Severely beaten their wives back to England and wherever they came from, and I had no problem with that.
Not at all.
It's a public safety. Go ahead.
Okay, so the question in my mind is, like, if you are a U.S. citizen and you batter your wife,
you go to jail.
So why wouldn't we just put these people in jail?
Why
the second punishment? That's what she's kind of saying. Maybe.
Well, these are not people who are U.S. citizens.
Right.
That's
So this is so you can see even though we're all crowded in the corner there, we still have a lot of discussion about that issue, and that's good. That's good. But it's good to be able to have that. Yeah, Jane.
Right, like the concept of what's a threat to public safety probably subject to a lot of interrogation.
And how it's enforced.
What, DUI?
And that's what we've been going through in great detail recently. That's what's changed greatly. And it's changing again now. But still, it's not, go ahead, I see a hand.
And I'm on this side, but I have concerns. If one of the reasons people are fleeing is because of increase in violence in their communities, if we deport people who are going to increase violence in their own communities, are we just going to be perpetuating, causing more migration in the long run by increasing violence in communities by disport? I mean, it's kind of a
that's a very, very interesting point. I'm glad you raised that. That's great.
And the, you know, what degree of the criminal act, you know, beating. Why are they doing these criminal acts? Because are they undocumented and it's very difficult for them here, and they get into the wrong. I was reading about in San Francisco and stuff. They're from the new areas where there's gangs. You know, they're filling those niches. So, you know, being undocumented, are we putting them in those situations that they would create, you know?
Right. That's argument two.
Okay. Another question back here.
We could actually spend the rest of this whole time talking about this issue because this is a deep issue, but we'll take a couple quick ones.
One thing I was thinking, kind of actually adding on to what Paul pointed out about how, by sending them back to these communities that could be perpetuating violence in their own countries, there should be more cooperation between. We shouldn't be just deporting them back to their own country. We should be sending them back to their country and then going in jail in their own country or in jail here. Like, they shouldn't just be going back onto the streets, even back where they were violent here, they're likely to be violent there.
But then the question is that double jeopardy? a person who's going to possibly be a lawyer in the future? That's a double jeopardy question, you know. So, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I had an experience. We had a friend that had signed up to run a marathon in Vancouver, Canada, and they refused to act him entrance to Canada because, of, you know, 20 years ago he had a DUI.
Yeah.
And so it's I think that has to do with also a sense of justice, like what is a reasonable punishment?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So this is a complex yeah. question. But we got to move around a little bit more. Let's try something that's called American identity. Yeah, this is going to be an easy slam dunk, so we'll move
yeah.
Okay. All right, on the one side, U.S. immigration policy should try to preserve an American culture that is white and Christian. Okay, and over here.
Yeah.
U.S. immigration policy should try to honor the American tradition of being a nation of immigrants.
Growth,
yeah. Now you're moving on that one. Okay. All right. All right. Okay, John, you're saying something. John.
I think these questions are really, they're set up in a way that they have a pretty basic answer. I feel like there need more possibilities to make it a more interesting discussion. Especially
oh, yeah.
because I feel like with people gathered here, we also can be generally of similar like minds on issues. Which means that we're not actually going to really have a good discussion here necessarily around this.
Well, no, that's
like
true.
Survey, you know,
it's a survey, though. And
yeah.
So, yeah, you're right about that. And but it's who's here. It's who's here.
Yeah.
It's not who's here.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's just say.
I agree with John. That was a slam dunk question. But the other one, more discussion was coming forward.
Okay, so, yeah. All right. So, yeah, Ron was saying that. This one is a slam dunk, the other one was a lot more. Okay, so here comes another one called Citizenship English. Okay? Over here, citizenship should be granted to any eligible immigrant. Over here, citizenship should only be granted to eligible immigrants who learn to speak English.
What was this side?
This side, okay, this side here is citizenship should be granted to any eligible immigrant. And now in the middle we have, well, by the door over here, by the piano, we have citizenship should only be granted to eligible immigrants who learn to speak English. Okay, now we spread ourselves out a little bit more. Does anyone who is near the screen would like to say anything? Don't feel you have to. Yeah.
Well, having adopted a foreign national as a young girl, couldn't speak English. Couldn't speak really at the point.
Uh-huh.
So she became naturalized, and I would support that for the kids.
Right. But
I strongly believe that. The best way forward is for the country to have a uniform language basis.
You become a citizen only after you've been in the United States for 5 years. And by that time, you should be able to at least speak some fundamental English.
So somebody from this side want to respond?
My mother and father grew up in a Finnish community in northern Michigan. They did not. Their parents immigrated from Finland. My parents did not learn English until they went to school.
Okay.
My grandparents were German, and they spoke German in the home until their oldest child went to school and came home and said, only English in school. My grandfather said, then only English in the home.
Okay, we got it. John.
I think that what it comes down to is I don't think that the U.S. needs to have an official language, but the word any is a very broad word, and that if we just look at that word and ignore it, it can mean many possibilities, so that's why I'm in the middle, because any eligible immigrant is much more broad than just any immigrant, because that could even go back to what we were talking about earlier with immigrants who have domestic violence cases and things like that, and that's why I'm in the middle, because any is just extremely broad.
Well, both said eligible, though, so, you know, yeah. You still have to be eligible,
mm-hmm.
and that's where that other question does come in,
yeah.
For sure. We got a lot of hands way back in the back now.
As an American, I've always prided myself on the multiculturalism of our country,
yeah.
And I love hearing other languages in cities and I think that it's something that makes us so unique. We've never had an official language as a country. We also have to remember that we're not on English speaking land anyway. This is all original native land, where hundreds of different languages were spoken. And I think I don't think there's any reason why we should have one official language or force our immigrants to speak a different language when this land isn't even English.
All right. One more. Someone who hasn't spoken, I'm trying to see in this, well, there's another hand over here. I don't think you have it.
Well, I just think that there's one thing about speaking a language, but there's also an ability to read a language, which is really what we need to do to be able to vote and be on a jury. I think a jury of your peers is really important. So I think that speaking is different than understanding.
Okay. All right, we're going to have to,
I think it's a process, and
he's talking.
I'm here because I think people should make an attempt to learn the English language, but I don't think it should be a requirement for citizenship.
And it's a detriment in society not to be able to.
But it's helpful for people to be learning the English language in this society.
All right.
I'll back on that for just 5 seconds. I've traveled many foreign countries, and my theory is that if I did not know the language of a particular country, and I haven't, but I should have sought out somebody to help teach me the basics.
Yeah, a very few words at least.
Okay, all right. Well, we got one more thing we can do here, so what should I pick? So it's really hard to, this is hard, because we've only done about 4 or 5 at this moment. Okay, so I'm going to, all right, so going back to the criminal thing, because that seemed to cause a lot of interest here. So let's do one that's called category of offense, all right? This will be our last one, and we'll see, because we had some debate about that. Okay, so over here, undocumented or illegal immigration should be a criminal offense punishable by jail time. Over here, undocumented or illegal immigration should be a minor offense punishable by fines or civil penalties. And out in the hallway if you don't think any of the above. Oh, they're going out. Yeah. Yeah.
Reread that, please.
All right, I will reread that.
Just a second.
The second one is undocumented or illegal immigration should be a minor offense punishable by fines or civil penalties. That's inside the room. Outside is shouldn't be punishable.
Okay. That's fine in the middle because
no, outside the room is not.
Oh yeah.
The other side over here is undocumented or illegal immigration should be a criminal offense punishable by jail time. If you don't think it should be punished at all, those are the people in the hallway. Always get more crowded out there. All right. Okay. Any comments about this one? Go ahead. I see your hand up there.
So I really think that there's a difference. Okay. So if you bring drugs or something bad over the border, that is an offense. If you're also kind of legally going over, that is bad. That's an offense. But just immigrating, just going over the border, to find a better life, to try to move, that shouldn't be an offense. The reason that there's so many illegal immigrants in the U.S. is because of just how hard it is immigrating. Right? I think that we should be trying to make it our immigration system easier. So that people don't have to even cross the border.
And there were some more questions about that in this study. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is obviously, you can all come in and take your seats again because we've run out of our time for that. And you shouldn't be standing up for more than 30 minutes anyway, really. Unless
I'm just curious on that white Christian nation one, how many people responded on the
survey? Oh, yeah. Okay.
I just want to be depressed.
Or it cropped a
optimistic.
All right. So the people, the closed stance is what the one you want to know. Only 6.5.
This
only 6.5 said that.
That's lower than I thought.
So her question there was, what she wanted to know was how many people, she wanted to be depressed to hear how many people really thought this should be a white Christian nation. And it was only 6.5% of the people. That's heartening. It's heartening. But I still say I'm still a little shocked about the fact that the highest value overall between the open and closed restricted stance on family separation is only 57%.
Wow.
You know, that's it. So it's there are people that think that
it's okay
to do that. So. All right. Somebody just was making a comment.
Because they think that in some cases that's the lesser of two evils.
I see a hand over there, and we'll move on.
So I tried to dialogue once with a woman I knew who was all in favor of the family separation. I was just trying to understand, how could you as a Christian be in favor of this? What her point of view was that there was no way to ever prove that that people's children were really their own, and she really believed it was all human trafficking going on, and that the only way to try to do that was to do this separation and then do DNA testing and do some very harsh measures, because she was so convinced that the vast majority of children crossing the border were being human trafficked, and that was the echo chamber she was living in.
The misinformation.
And so I think that sometimes it's a matter of that kind of
right. Yeah. It is, and sometimes it's the people have to be able to see or hear the stories from that person, and not from you.
Yeah.
You know, from a trusted messenger.
Right.
That's what's needed. Yeah. Well, and trusted messenger really is the concept now when you talk about, you're going to be, do you see that here? Consider who the best messengers are. You know, that's an important aspect of this. Okay, so here's some of the research that they've done as a result of this study in talking about how do you talk about these? How 5 ways to have a better conversation about immigration. These are Wendy's 5 ways. Counter the zero-sum mindset. You know, and this is the scarcity question. Are you a person who the cup is half empty or the cup is half full? You know, it's that kind of, we only have this many resources, this is what we got to do. You know, that's a question there. Tread lightly around the sacred. That's what they were learning when they saw how immigration has become sacred in a way that never was before. Tell binding values-based and emotional stories rather than cite facts, because facts are not going to do it for people. And here, consider who the best messengers are, they have to be trusted. Help shift the norms in your community by telling stories, engaging in discussions, and acting in ways that exemplify your values and hopes for how your community should treat your neighbors, all of them. And so this is where it's what you do in your communities that is going to make the difference. People who maybe your friends who totally disagree with you, as they see what you're doing, may become curious about that. As you talk about what you're doing, may become curious about it. So that's what's really important. Yeah.
I know of a person, I'm from Seattle, which tends to be slightly liberal, and who did not have the same values and was not in the same position on a lot of these issues as most, if not all, of her neighbors. And she
felt so harassed and mistreated in her community that after growing up in her neighborhood, she moved to Florida. And I really thought, oh, wow. So how are we helping this situation at all? Fortunately, it wasn't my neighborhood. But how, you know, who are we to point a finger if we are condemning someone for their thoughts and beliefs and ideas to the point where they have to move across the country to feel like they're safe and I'm not going to be harassed, then maybe I need to rethink, you know, how I approach people and what I think of them, the judgments I make about who they are and their character.
Well, that could happen on both sides, you know, depending on what communities
you're
in. Well,
yeah, exactly. It's just sometimes I think we don't realize that we could be doing the same things with good intentions, but the people, we can still make people feel
pure.
And that's why I like so much what you have here, because it allows a conversation that is more respectful.
Hopefully. And that's what we were trying to do even on Tuesday when we started. So what you're seeing now is a messaging memo which just talks about how you tell stories, especially around that conviction area, you know, and how you, the messaging memo from community, the community network. So you have a page there. And what they're talking about here, especially talking about convictions, well, first of all, looking at one of the ways that you can counter some of the rhetoric is by talking about the size and scope of the immigration system and how our budgets are becoming outsized. And so there is waste involved. And you look at the trends over the years as more and more resources are being put into ICE. And ICE originally was conceived of as having a certain mission, and that mission has gone to mission creep, and the resources have followed it. So that's one piece. And the fact that black and brown immigrants are being disproportionately targeted, and that is absolutely the truth. And when you think about what's happened to Cameroonians and Haitians, and even in the early years, the planes were still full. I mean, on January 20th, there was a whole plane load of Cameroonians that were deported on that day. But that wasn't the last flight of Cameroonians that were deported. So there's still a lot of that going on. And even now, and so some people say, well, it's not because Biden's in favor of it, it's because they haven't gotten complete control over everybody and every level. And I don't know what it is, but I still think that this, you know, white supremacy is acting. People from different countries face different rules. You know, and that's exactly what we have going on. And we talked a little bit about that. I think yesterday that came up. People can be punished twice with the outsized threat of deportation for offenses committed long ago. And that's something that we've recently seen. You know, and that's what's resulted in people ending up in sanctuary. Okay, so when we're going to end this little piece right here, this first part of it, which is, this was about the messaging and awareness building and things like that. And just by bringing this slide up to you again to say that, you know, here we have the resources. And in fact, one of the things I forgot to mention to you is that migrant journey that you did on those 2 days, is we actually have that as a resource on the web. And you'll be able to download it together with the script as the leader, you know, so that you will be able to have some of the facts that I was talking about. You had a different experience than what you're going to see there, because we had the very beautiful gift of having, you know, Ann and Willie with us, and so we were able to incorporate what's happening in Cameroon here and talk about Senegal as well. But we're also incorporating what's happening in the Americas with Venezuela and Haiti, and I had to skip the Nicaraguan case because we just couldn't have any more, as you can see. We kept going. But you're going to see that resource there, and you should definitely take advantage and use it and adapt it. We have students that are doing that right now. So, of course, you know, it's all about how are we standing up to racism, and how are we changing the picture, you know, and part of it has been, you know, through some of the protests that we have seen. And so, Advocacy. I mean, if you're thinking about your steps, about what are you going to do, advocacy is really key. So I probably don't maybe have enough of these, but you're probably going to want to get this from me by writing your name up on a piece of paper here at the end so that you can get this and get the links that are in this. This is an advocacy page that was prepared by my colleague, Giovanna Lahaka, before I left. You can see the date on it. It's July. It's dated July 21st. She had to get it to me so we could actually make some copies of it. So what you have here is what's happening right now. We are about to enter into the August recess. And so right now it's extremely critical for us to be really taking advantage of the fact that our representatives and senators are back, they're supposed to be back, with their constituencies, and you should be able to possibly get an appointment, to meet with them during this period of time. One of the things we always emphasize in advocacy is this period of time, the August recess, as being a time that you should be in contact with your representatives. So you will see on page 2 how to take action right there. Engage with your member of Congress. And Gio has a blog there that has key questions that you could ask during in-person meetings or town hall meetings. So that's why if you want to get this, so you can just click on the links and see these things. I'll have a piece of paper, just write your email address there, and I'll make sure that you get a mailing that gets out to you. You can also call your representative, and she has instructions with how to do that right here. All right, and what are you talking about? Those things are in here too. Citizenship for all is something that we need to pass. Now, and we have to get this done before the midterms. So this is what I want to tell you about is something that I learned about. Everybody has heard of bird dogging, right? Does everybody know what bird dogging is here?
No.
There is a project called Nakasak that lets you do phone dogging. It's incredible. We'll have a list up here. If you want to get information, the next time I get a phone dogging, I will send you this. So this is how phone dogging works. There's an issue like citizenship for all, which is something they're trying to always say is something we need to keep pushing with our representatives and our senators. And the way phone dogging works is at 5 o'clock, it's actually 5 o'clock Eastern time, 4 o'clock Central, okay? So then it's gonna be like 2 o'clock here. You will go to this meeting, this Zoom meeting. They will say, today we are phone dogging on X issue. Here's some points that you might wanna bring up with your representatives and your senators. And you'll have your cell phone, you'll have your computer there, but you'll also have your cell phone. You will then dial the number they tell you, and fill in the information about where exactly you are, on this. It's really simple. I mean, they collect the information about where you are ahead of time. You put your name and your phone number in. And after they do the prep, then they'll say, are you ready to go? Dial back in. And they will dial all those numbers for you. And so it's really fun. So they will first dial up your representative, And the reason they do it at 5 o'clock is it's the idea of getting as many messages on there. So when they come in the next day, because most of them don't answer the phone at 5 o'clock, you leave your message at 5 o'clock. And their phone is jammed with all these people who say citizenship matters, the next day. So you will probably say, in my case it'll be, Senator Wenmore is not available right now, Representative, please leave a message after the tone. And you'll say, I am Mary Campbell from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I'm calling you about citizenship for all, my points, A, B, and C. Here they are. And then they'll say at the very beginning of the call, when you're finished, press star, and they will move you on to your senator. And then when you finish that, press star. They will move you on to your other senator. Press star. They will move you on to Nancy Pelosi. Yes. And Chuck Schumer, and they will move you on to others as well. I mean, so you do about 5 or 6 calls on this phone dogging, and you're done. You know, it's really fun. So I'm just saying, try something new with your advocacy, and see what you can do with that. So right now we are at the very tail end. I think the campaign might have finished just at the end of the weekend. We are members of the LCA with the Interfaith Immigration Coalition, which is the largest interfaith immigration coalition working in D.C. And they have an asylum group, they have a detention group, and it's really great to be with people across all walks of faith and be able to advocate on immigration topics. And they just finished a Welcome Asylum Seekers, Welcome with Dignity campaign. And so there's a lot of resources there about Welcome with Dignity. So I would encourage you to have some information here about that as well. So these are really important. I mean, and this should be something that anyone in this room can do, because there's all kinds of options and ways of doing it. Okay. Any questions that you want to ask me about that right now?
Would that be on the website also?
The Interfaith Immigration Coalition, they have their own website, and you can actually sign up, and they will send you regular updates about that. So that's one of the ways you can do that. Okay, yeah.
You might have covered this before I came in, but we had a talk yesterday about the relative power of postal mail, texting, telephones, or emails to members of Congress?
Yeah, I didn't mention that here. No, I did not cover that. Okay. No, that was a private conversation. At this moment in time, you can send regular letters, and they're still receiving them, but they take much longer to get there. So the telephone calls are being counted. That's probably more effective. But they're also looking at the emails. And I can tell you from experience, they're responding to them. So just know that your regular letters, postal letters, are going to take longer. Because you remember when we had all that stuff that was going in the mail, and people were sending poison through the mail. And so that changed everything. So in Congress, they're holding on to the mail a little bit longer. So just know that that's happening. Okay. All right, so now we're going to switch our focus. You know, we're switching our focus a little bit more to the accompaniment side and looking at more about the church's response and looking at our possible responses. So I just wanted to go to this slide to show you in Amparo where we have companions, or where we have had companions in the last 5 years, what this has looked like. So you can see, and Anne really did tell me, she said, you need to define this a little bit more. Just don't say ELCA companions. We're talking about international organizations and churches with whom we work, and with whom the ELCA has historic relationships with. Some go back to the founding of some of the churches, but not the ones that are particularly on this list. These were not, ELCA had didn't have a particular hand here in any of these. And so these are some of the companions that are doing work in countries of origin, in transit, and in the United States. And it was so fun when Neil mentioned having been on a visit to Cruzando Fronteras in Nogales. That's a partnership that we have with the Grand Canyon Synod. And the Grand Canyon ELCA Synod and Episcopal Church are working, and not just them, the Methodists are in there too.
Okay.
And there's like 5 or 6 churches. In fact, I think the Methodists are managing money for us, all of us in this project. But Cruzando Fronteras is a shelter located in Nogales, Mexico, which was extremely key for people who were stuck on the other side and not able to go through. And a group of pastors had a chance to go and visit that ministry. And I had a chance to go with the Grand Canyon Synod Council to visit that ministry too. It was really, really great experience. So we have, and then in the United States, we work very closely with Lutheran Immigration Refugee Service, Lutheran Services of America, and Church World Service. So those are the companions that carry out the work. And now what you're seeing, okay, so this is kind of like the before and after. So we started moving in 2020 to borrow the Americas. So what you're seeing here is what happened pre, you know, in kind of 2016 to 19, is the different relationships that we have with churches, and the arrows really need to go both ways. We need to have that, because that's how it's how it really works. And now with all of the work that's happening in the rest of the Americas, this is where the connections are. The beauty of this is that when the Salvadoran Lutheran Church either talks to Stephen Deal, our regional representative, or they or contacts me about a migrant that they a person a Lutheran who has come from one of their communities to the United States and needs accompaniment, we now have the 201 churches around the country where they're able to do that. You know, and so that story is coming up. I mean, I can tell a pretty cool story about that one, or lots of stories about that one. That's been very fun to see. And because we have all this work happening with people who have been deported and returned from the United States and Mexico, even other church bodies that don't have those relationships with companions that are doing work with deported and returned migrants call us and say, so-and-so is going to Honduras, and they've gone in this migrant cycle over and over and over again, and they really need, but they have nothing there. You know, can LWF, can the Lutheran World Federation program in Olancho work with this person? And we can say yes. And so this is where people are able to get. It's the network that's now become international. And we do work outside of just the Americas. And so that's, you know, it's in, I mean, Ann and Willie and I are talking a lot more now, you know, because especially with all the deportations, when the planes were leaving the United States to go to Cameroon, it's what's the church in Cameroon going to do and what are the people going to do, you know, to accompany the people there. So, I mean, it's. I think the map is going to keep expanding. Yes?
I don't know if this is premature in your talk, but at some point, could you give just a really brief sketch of what it would be like to actually accompany somebody somewhere?
Yep, we can do that. So, the last thing I want to do before I show you video is to say, what do the ELCA companions do and how do they do it, okay? Provide holistic services in their countries of reintegration. They are in contact with each other, and they are in collaboration with other networks that are local. So this is like a huge, it's like a huge and increasing network. And what's really important about it is this last thing that you're seeing right here. They have a shared vision using a rights-based approach, you know, which includes the importance of advocacy. Rights-based, you know, which means that looking at the dignity of human beings and their rights as human beings. And that's what drives this. It's not all they're needing, you know. So, so that's that piece. So now let's just see. Again, we're gonna close this. I might have to put this. Oh, come on. Well, let's don't save it. Let's get this thing open here. All right. Here is a video about our international work.
Here comes your helper.
Yeah.
I know she
was. I think Joan was helping with yesterday.
Yeah. No, he was doing a different thing.
It looks like there's an arrow to the lower right of the picture that'll pop you up to full.
Right there?
That'll just make it bigger.
Oh.
There it is.
Yes.
Okay.
It won't show that.
Oops. What's this one do?
That full screen to
maximize. Okay, well, let's. Let's get it back to the beginning.
except see how big it is? Like, I can't.
Yeah.
No, up and
at least we can read the words.
We can read the words.
Over.
Keep going.
Well, the thing, okay, but, okay, there.
Yeah.
All right.
There.
Okay.
There.
Okay, but you're missing all the stuff over here.
It's your choice.
It just resized.
That's the right size.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, now all that helping, I lost my
first.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, come back. Here I come back. Whee!
Yay!
Me quieren el piso a llorar,
yeah.
Ya no puedo. Arruinaron mi vida porque no puedo seguir así. Hay mucha gente mala y yo lo que quiero pues es que tu gracia llegue a mi vida. Y ahí comenzó mi fe a fluir y fue cuando al mes me tocaron la puerta y llegó y él me dijo, están ayudando en la Federación Luterana de Migrantes. Esto no es parte de ningún político. Si quiere, vaya.
¿Quién va a decidirse solo por irse así, me entiende? ¿Verdad? De que si sin necesidad de uno, ¿para qué se va a ir? Pues le digo, se está viendo que aquí en Honduras no tiene su cama, tiene su familia. ¿Para qué te vas a ir para los estados? La necesidad de ir ahí es difícil porque imagínense que uno va con la ilusión de llegar a Estados Unidos casi dos meses pues, guerreando en el camino y allá te dan como que nada y te deportan y sabiendo que en dos meses estuviste para llegar y hoy a las 6 de la mañana te mandan y a las 11 de la mañana estás otra vez aquí en Honduras ya, ligerito.
Estaba llegando a Honduras en los últimos años y que carecía de apoyo, carecía de algunas iniciativas, ya sea de instituciones locales, gubernamentales o no gubernamentales. Por lo tanto, la necesidad se presentaba como de inmediato.
Our Unpopular Companions are some of the only organizations that are focusing on return migrants. I think there were certain things that Christ was very clear about during his earthly ministry. The business of welcoming the stranger and the sojourner, it's black and white. So it's not a question of should we help these people or not. We have a biblical mandate.
Después de la atención psicológica hay un proceso de formación técnico-vocacional y también damos habilidades para la vida. Tiene que ver mucho con el cambio de comportamientos y una formación basada en valores y principios para que Luz y las jóvenes se reinserten a la vida social y productiva.
Se les apoya para descubrir sus potencialidades, por decirlo así, en temas de negocios, en habilidades para producir X o Y producto.
Creo que la belleza es mi pasión, mi viaje. Me encanta el viaje. Jugar con cabello, jugar los cortes de cabello. Y me desenvuelvo bastante en de maquillaje, se me da mucho.
And with just a little bit of help, a minimal bit of help, they can reestablish their lives and move forward and reach the conclusion that, oh, there is something for me here.
Poco a poco te van dando tu capital para que vayas emprendiendo, trabajando. Cuando yo empecé, me dieron $1,000 en producto. En la mesa que está mirando, ellos también me la dieron.
Con el capital semilla que nos han proveído nosotros ya desempeñamos otro tipo de trabajo, ¿entiendes? Más profesional y trabajo que antes no hacíamos con las herramientas, ahora lo hacemos.
entendí que aquello era mi vida y que acá no tenía nada. Pero luego cuando vino la federación y empecé a involucrarme, a ir a los talleres, a moverme en otros ámbitos con la red de jóvenes, entonces ya el aspecto se me fue yendo y ya fui entrando. Yo pienso que me ha dejado muy buena enseñanza porque me he desenvuelto con personas que no conocía y ahora conozco.
El sueño es conocer otras organizaciones que también nos apoyen para poder ayudar a los jóvenes, así como nos ayudó a nosotros la federación, nosotros poder ayudar a otros jóvenes que también entrenan aquí en nuestro país y no así.
Vamos a seguir en el futuro, primeramente a Dios, nos dé la oportunidad. Me miro como tener una o varias empresas, puede ser en el rubro de la pintura o en el rubro de la estructura metálica.
Si puedo transmitir a otros jóvenes el entusiasmo de querer seguir adelante, de que tengamos una visión más allá de que esto no está aquí, esto no se quedó aquí. Tenemos cómo levantarnos. Entonces, eso me motiva todos los días de mi vida. Porque sé que vienen cosas nuevas. Que lo que antes no tenía, porque no tenía nada. Y ahora tengo.
So that video is on the web. Were any of you like churchwide assembly voting members here? No. Okay, so that's what they saw. And the cool thing was when our people were on the screen and they were watching it on my Facebook camera and seeing themselves in, you know, in Milwaukee. So yeah, that was, and so we're, you know, our communication is such that Facebook was like, oh my gosh, you have been in front of everybody. All right, so that's 70% of the work that we're doing internationally. And what this really means is that the people who are participating in the program are able to make ends meet and make new lives. And it has not been perfect, as I shared on Tuesday. People in the program have been killed. And so, yeah, that's the other. But that's cool. They're seeing Giovanna. Wow. That is our.
Acknowledge the continued phenomenon of migration from around the world, but especially from our region neighbors in Central America and the Caribbean, from people fleeing extreme hardship. Migration has its roots in many systemic issues, including violence, poverty, and climate change. But we believe that due to our connection to companion churches in the region, including companion synod relationships and existing ministries in the U.S., the ELCA is well positioned to help ensure that these vulnerable people are protected and receive the welcome they deserve. Ambato is a holistic whole church commitment by the
ELCA. Okay, so that is our migration policy director, Giovanna Oaxaca. She's 24, and she is a DACA recipient. And so now you know her face, and you can call her up anytime. Yeah, go ahead.
I was at an ELCA advocacy webinar.
Yeah.
She was one of the presenters.
Yes.
And again, they were asking us to contact Congress during August.
Uh-huh.
And you can email her and she'll give you a list of.
Yes, yeah, she will. And she prepared that document that you have, and I'll be sending out to those of you who would like to get the links. But it's really been great to work with Giovanna. Born in Ciudad Juarez, her family migrated to Oregon, and she went to school there, so she's a graduate of the University of Oregon. And then decided that she was called for advocacy, went to D.C. She worked with Network. Some of you may know the Nuns on the Buses and Sister Simone. So that's where she got her first training in advocacy. And you know, we just took her away because we were lucky. You know, so now she's working with us. So that was a good thing that we actually did that, because it's always easier when you know somebody's face maybe to contact them and hear their voice and be able to contact them. Yeah.
So do you think, I mean, calling our people in Washington, D.C., do you think some of the senators and representatives know about this Lutheran World Federation project in Honduras? And wouldn't they be thrilled to know that we're working to keep people in their own countries and supporting that kind of thing? Are there any government programs doing the same? I mean, I know we can't give our tax money to them to work on it, but wouldn't it be nice if we could give some tax money to other programs in those other countries?
Well, so this is something that we have started to do, is really encourage when we meet with representatives, like we just did in the advocacy thing, and I think it might have been one of the, there was an LIRS advocacy too. Were you, was that the one you were in, or just the one on the August recess?
It was just the one in the August recess.
Okay. We just recently had a chance to meet with Senator, no, it's Ron Kind, Representative Ron Kind in Wisconsin, which was very interesting. And we were talking to him, and he actually is an ELCA Lutheran, which was something that he does not have on his website and was unknown to everyone until we're talking to him. And he's very much a supporter, you know, of working on immigration issues. So we actually did say to him, if you want to go to Honduras or wherever you want to go, you know, we can, we have companions that you could visit to do exactly what Mary's talking about there, mm-hmm. you know, and to see this kind of work, because governments are not doing it, but the governments also have a lot of other issues, you know, in terms of corruption, and will not, you know.
Is this something that Biden could work on with the leaders of Honduras or the leaders of these
other countries? That's what the whole Root Causes Initiative is supposed to try to do, but it's a really long-term thing.
Yeah.
So it's going to take a long, long time before we see any results. This doesn't want to let me take it out, though. So what's the story on that one?
No, can you just...
Let's just do that.
Yeah.
It probably just fine. So that's the piece of the international work. And I just think you need to know that that has to be an integral part of everything we do. And so now what we're going to do is start talking about the U.S. stuff here. So, I'm going to put that one in there. Oh, and now, yes, Gethsemane. We're going to see this great
video.
We're just going to play wine. And the only one we're going to play is Gethsemane.
Aww.
I mean, there's lots of fun stuff on this. Okay, so now let's do a few minutes about sanctuary. You know, we're doing okay on the timing. And welcoming. Okay, so I'm going to send some of these around here. Everybody take this over here, and bring some over to Ann so she gets a couple of rows going over there. Okay, sanctuary, because I did say I was going to talk about it. I mean, we are so blessed in the ELCA to have so many. We have 47 sanctuary congregations that are connected to the Amparo Network, and these are churches that fall into two categories. Some have been sanctuary hosting congregations, and one of them is Gethsemane in Seattle, who you're going to just see on their video that was produced. And you'll hear about the story of who they hosted. And then there are sanctuary supporting congregations. And these are congregations that don't feel like they can have a shower tower, they don't have facilities, but they really want to support sanctuary. And so what they do is, especially, and you're going to see some sanctuary supporting congregations in this video, because sanctuary is not, Gethsemane couldn't have done this alone. They had to do it in a network of congregations, and it's an interfaith network of congregations that's doing it. So that's why, you know, sanctuary supporting, sanctuary hosting, those are all potentials. So you may have realized, of course, that we became a sanctuary church body at the last churchwide assembly. And so one of the things that was asked of us was that we produce sanctuary guidelines so that people would understand it better and know what they should do. And these are, and the church council just adopted these sanctuary guidelines unanimously, which was a shock to all of us, in the April meeting. So these are now online. And you'll be able to download it. But I left a couple copies here in case somebody wants to page through them or take these copies or something here, which talk about what is sanctuary, introduction, you know, well, first of all, how did you get here? Then the opening comments about what is sanctuary. Then there is sanctuary guidance for congregations, sanctuary guidance for synods, and for the churchwide office. The different activities and things that we're supposed to, that we are going to be doing. So, what you're going to be seeing very soon is you're going to be seeing a piece that I was hoping to bring to Holden but did not make it, called, it's called Illegal, you know, and the use of language. And it's about, and I had an interesting conversation with somebody about that, but using the word illegal when talking about undocumented people and what to do. And we also will have our own sanctuary discernment guides. Even though right now, in the ELCA, except in two cases, all of the people we had in sanctuary in seven congregations are now out. And we don't know how long we are going to have before we might be looking at sanctuary once again. So it's good for congregations to even continue now in this time, when maybe not a lot of people are asking for sanctuary, to look at this document and to figure out what's happening. And I have to tell the coolest story, even though this probably takes a minute to do. A congregation that isn't even connected to the Amparo Network in Pennsylvania, had I show up at one of their meetings, and they had a whole group of people in their hall, some of whom were undocumented, and they're not connected to us, they are not activists in any shape, form, or manner, and I still haven't figured out which congregation that is, because this story came to me through the grapevine, and it hasn't, and nobody who I know can track them down. Their leadership went to the door and basically said, we are an ELCA congregation, and our church body is a sanctuary church body. And the ICE official said, what are you talking about? And they said, well, Google it. And they did. They did, and they saw that the ELCA, and they said, well, you can see we're an ELCA congregation. And ICE backed off.
Yeah.
They backed off.
Wow.
So that is what can happen. Wow. Even if you're not connected, they felt safe, but they knew that we were a church, at ELCA, a sanctuary church body, and they used that to their advantage to keep people safe, in their congregation that day. So anyway, yeah. So here's this great video from Gethsemane in Seattle.
Sometimes our worst natures get activated by people from other lands, from other cultures, by people we don't understand immediately when they're in the neighborhood with us and that we don't maybe get chances to know very well. And it can activate something about our human response to difference that isn't a very attractive quality. So you go back to scripture and you say, oh, that's why this is a commandment that repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats, because it's hard to do.
Señor Robles, y pues de mi personalidad, todo el mundo me conoce en Lakewood, que soy una persona buena, gente como muchas gentes, y pues más que nada con mi familia, eso, enfocarnos en la familia.
Part of working for justice and peace over all the earth is to be prepared as churches to welcome and to come around and support and get to know people and tell them, this is going to be a safe place for you.
Pues, muy difícil estar separado de la familia, de mi trabajo, de lo que he hecho toda mi vida, desde que tenía 13 años, puedo trabajar para sostener mi familia y poder seguir. Te extraño tanto mi trabajo, estar cerca de mis hermanos, toda mi familia. Es difícil, pero por una buena causa, pues tenemos que superar todo esto y esperar buenos resultados.
Kind of like this congregation coming back to its roots as a welcoming place in the 1880s for immigrants from Sweden. It's something that's been in us all along. And I think it was just this way of turning things just a little bit so that we could see that not only our neighbors need, but our capacity to serve our neighbors.
We can only work together because we know each other, and as we know each other, we trust each other. And when we trust each other, we can stand together at times when we may be taking some risks for justice.
To be in support of Gethsemane, what we decided early on is that we all couldn't provide sanctuary, that is, equip our congregations with an apartment, but we could. There was a lot of need for supporting, well, certainly supporting monetarily, but being in contact with the people, helping them to find resources that they needed for their children.
I think the amazing pieces have come in not only other Christian communities working together, but people of other faiths and of no faith.
The scripture said, love your neighbor as you love yourself, no conditions applied. So that's what changed in me, the way I look at strangers, the way I be welcome strangers. I mean, I'm really happy that I'm a part of a church which did this.
Really nice meeting Natalie and Jose and their family, because like I knew I was gonna make a new friend. And I felt really glad about it.
We didn't entirely know what we were getting into. I think of that a lot when I think about the story of Jesus, and I'm not sure that a lot of those disciples knew what was being asked to follow this man.
Just find what's needed in your community. Work with partners who have their ears to the ground and know what's going on in the immigration community. Don't be afraid, or if you are afraid, harness your fear and turn it towards positive action.
Good video. You're doing a great job.
Beautiful.
Okay, so that's a little about sanctuary, but you all received the welcoming congregation thing here, and we've got the key page. So we're connected in 53 of the 65 synods. So we're connected to all. Well, Montana and Alaska are not connected yet, so anybody here from those two synods, we'd love to get a congregation there. Anybody from northwest Minnesota and western North Dakota? No. Those are the two other synods we don't have connections in. Anybody from Indiana, Kentucky? No. I don't think I remember hearing anybody from there. And then it's really our East Coast. You know, there's a whole chunk of them in Pennsylvania, and that we still aren't connected. But even if you are a synod, so most of it sounds like everybody here is in a synod that's already got lots of connections, we still need more welcoming congregations. Because when we have people, okay, here's a story. Okay, well, first of all, let me say, welcoming is four things, and they're not monetary. They're their willingness to spiritually accompany, which every church should always be doing anyway. They're willing to physically accompany. And Mitch asked a question about what does that mean. It may mean going to ICE check-ins with people. It may mean going to court with people. It may mean helping them in their transition to being in the community, which means going to school to make sure the kids can get into school and things like that. It's not a financial commitment, although some of our welcoming congregations do take that on. And they do make some financial commitments. And then third, to pray for justice and to work for justice. Those are the commitments that you're making in doing that. And so all you do is fill out that form, get your pastor to sign it, or your leader to sign it, send it back in, and become number 200, and next is 202. Okay, go ahead.
So the accompanying, is that just like the Guardians program for the underage?
You the Guardians, I'm going to do that next. Okay. Yeah, that's another way that we have. And that's really, so when people call me up and say, what can I do? The first thing I usually say, you know, is get your congregation involved in the network, because this is something that really is best done with people as opposed to separately. But if you are an individual and you are in one of those other places where you and your congregation is or is not involved, you are able to then, you know, come in as a guardian angel and we can see something on that, because we actually have 10 minutes left. That's okay.
Say I'm an immigrant from Mexico, an illegal immigrant, and I get to San Diego, and I know that this church is a sanctuary church. Can I just go in that church and stay there and say, no, I'm protected, even though I might have been brought it drugs
no.
or did something? No.
No, that, no. And with sanctuary, it's a process where it's a much more complicated process. A congregation will prepare to become sanctuary, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they will be hosting, because as I said, there's two different kinds of congregations.
So what we have said to all the ELC congregations in our basics around sanctuary, which is another thing you can find on our on the Sanctuary Church web page, is that every congregation should at the very least investigate who in their neighborhood does offer sanctuary, because or does offer some those kinds of accompaniment. Because it's not that somebody does not go into sanctuary just because they need a place to live. You know, it's
I have to do something else before I can go into that church and say I want sanctuary.
There's a lot of things that will happen. The church will sit down with you, and the network, the sanctuary network, will sit down with you and talk with you.
So I could go there and ask a question, but then after that.
Yeah, there's a whole lot that will happen as a result of that. But each congregation should at least know who, you know, if somebody came to your door and said that, they should at least know who in your area might be able to assist some of the sanctuary, because there are 36 sanctuary networks around the United States. So that's not perfect coverage, but it certainly means that there is the capacity to be close to a sanctuary network where that kind of discernment about whether someone needs to be in a facility or not can be made. I will tell you this, our sanctuary congregations have often been accompanying asylum seekers in that way, you know, through congregational sponsorship, which is a different thing. Sanctuary, you know, your lot, you saw, that was actually inside the church. They have a little patio area there, which is, looked like he was behind bars, and he actually was behind bars for 20 months. He got released in February. He was in a church. He was in a church facility. Asylum seekers that are being accompanied don't have that same kind of restriction. You know, so that's that piece. So I would just really encourage you to consider looking at becoming a welcoming congregation. And okay, the Guardian Angel Program. We're really running out of time on that. So the Guardian Angel Program, I wanted to show you a cool video on that one too, is the physical presence of the church in the courtroom. And we have it now in 11 locations, about to become 13. And so what happens is we send people two by two to court in these different locations, these cities around the country. Where they're located is in Boston and Hartford, Connecticut, in Atlanta, Detroit, and Chicago. Minneapolis, St. Paul is another one. We have Denver, and we have Omaha, Nebraska, and San Francisco. All have Guardian Angel programs. So if you're located close to the centers of any of those cities, you can volunteer to become a Guardian Angel and go be trained to go to court. You will go to court with a Spanish speaker, unless you are a Spanish speaker, in which case you might be accompanying an English speaker. Sometimes two Spanish speakers go. And you will be going for, you will be seeing children and families who are going to court for their first appearances. You will be able to pray with them before they go in. You will be able to be in the courtroom while they are there. You will be able to be with them afterwards to make sure that they understand what they need to do. Because yes, there's translation in court, but it's different when church, and we like to call this the physical presence of the church in the courtroom. And it's really a significant opportunity to accompany people. We have situations where some of our ELCA members are going to court, and when they have asked, we have sent guardian angels to accompany them to court. We have had lawyers call us up and say, can you send guardian angels to be with my people in court, because they're scared. They want to see friendly faces there. And in some cases, the lawyers don't feel like they have as much Spanish, you know, as they might need at that moment, and they like to have other people that could be there with them. So those are the programs that we currently have up and running, and the next two are going to be Arlington and Houston. So you can look forward to some possibility of doing that.
So yeah. Not Seattle.
Not Seattle yet, no. And so what does it take to have one in Seattle? Because that is a really prime location for having a Guardian Angel program. What you need is somebody who can commit to coordinating it, and somebody who, and be able to recruit maybe a dozen volunteers who will agree to go to court twice a year for a half a day to actually be in the courtroom. And so the coordinator basically gets the court dates, sends them out to all the volunteers. The volunteers have a partner, they sign up, and they write back to the coordinator saying, we want to take this date, or we want to take that date. and then they go to court, and then they return with the court dates. And so then, you know, you're able to see what the future court dates are. So it's not a huge job, you know, to mount the program. And congregations have been doing it all over. So, yeah.
Oh, I wanted to say something about that, because it's happening already, or it's been happening since 2007, having sat in court quite a few times. And so I think that's part of it. But it would be something, you saw Michael Ramos, who was in the Gethsemane video. The Church Council of Greater Seattle has an accompaniment department because of the ELCA. So that would be a conversation to have when he's on the faculty here during week 7, so that we can explore. They have a brand new staff person who is the coordinator of that department, to look at how we might coordinate more closely with Amparo and be part of the network of the Guardian Angels, because, right. Yeah, it's a really powerful experience. ELCA congregations and pastors have been in court with people in detention and deportation hearings for the last 15 years in Seattle. We have a detention center right there in Tacoma, folks from Tacoma. So we've had a presence at the detention center also since 2007.
Okay, that's great. You know, the question is always going to be, are they doing the children's cases as well as the adult cases? Because sometimes that's where the difference is, and so that's a good question to explore. So our final thing to do in our last, like, 3 minutes, you know, before we go, is everybody gets one of these. Let me see, take these over here. All right, so now what are you going to do, you know? When you get your sheet, read the different options that are available to you. One of the things I didn't go over a lot is, do you know that we have border immersion experiences that are available to congregations at the border through Iglesia Cristo Rey in El Paso and the Border Servant Corps in Las Cruces? So that's another option. And also we have something going on in Tijuana. So you have an option there to possibly take a group and have an immersion experience. The root cause trips are probably going to start again, and we have our companions in the region in Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, who can provide some insight into root cause work as well. So take a look at your options there. I want you to, you know, at least identify one that you can do. Don't put that down, man. You know, she's putting it down.
Oh no,
that's
one.
Well, those are the extras, okay. Identify one thing that you're gonna do. I'm gonna give you a minute to do that, and I want you to find a person in this room and let that person know what that one thing is gonna be. Okay. So here's your time to read them over.
You want to look and see?
I know what I'm going to do.
What are you going to do?
Try to find out if there's kind of being through somewhere in Illinois. There's a sanctuary kind of right here. But there has to be a great Episcopal or Methodist Christian. So that's what I'll find that out. That's all
right. We talked about Amparo, because it was fall of 2019. So I'm
Okay, is everybody identified? Has everybody identified something that they can do? Okay, on your way out, There's some markers up there. Write it on the whiteboard. I want to take a picture of that. You know. And so I want to say thank you for being here, all of you. And I hope that this is not the last time we meet, and that we will see all of your engagement with Amparo in some way, one way or the other. Thank you for being here.